Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Rooster Crows podcast. My name is Tyler Campbell, and today we'll be hearing a live sermon by Reverend Roberta Howie, recorded from the Lawrence Park Church Sanctuary on a Sunday morning. Today's sermon is titled, The Bonds of War.
We are here commemorating a day that's filled with complex thoughts and emotions for everybody. Grief, of course, for all those who have died in combat and for their families who have suffered immeasurable losses. Anger that we as humans could let it get to this point. Hope for a future with no violence, that no one need to be a veteran because there's no war. While our building was constructed after World War II, almost every church that was built before the 1940s has a list of the men and women that have served in World War I and II. Many of those rosters will also designate if they died in service. There's many more plaques and scrolls and books with names of those who have served and died in combat in Korea, Afghanistan, peacekeeping missions globally. During World War II, Canada had roughly, just from military chaplains, 1,400 serving their forces, deployed to offer sacraments, prayers, and pastoral care to service members, regardless of their religious background. At least 20 would be killed over the course of the war. Over the past year or so, we have been commemorating the 100th anniversary of the United Church of Canada. And part of that commemoration for me is also understanding our role as the United Church of Canada in Canadian military history. So I invite us to come back into that time of history. In the UCC, we serve a big tent. And we take pride on that we are going to have many differing opinions and theologies and ideas, and that they're going to clash together, but being forged together to create something stronger. It is filled with critical questions. No one simply takes the doctrine, peace as a whole, and says is 100% true. The hard part with military history is that, compared to some of my previous sermons, it felt a lot more visceral. It is not that there were not women in the United Church. It is not that there were not LGBTQ people in the United Church. But with military history, everyone knew someone who was on the front lines at that one moment. They were their brothers, their sons, their husbands. They were their sisters, their daughters, their friends, gone overseas or gone to stations along the coast. There was a very real possibility that they were talking about these people not coming back or coming back so irreparably changed they would not be recognizable. So it was very heightened in a way that we haven't seen here in a very long time, though many here may remember. How do we in the United Church of Canada talk about a war? How do we proclaim a Christ that calls for peace, knowing as well that we are called to serve in a war that will be anything but peaceful? Do we support the war, knowing that many will not make it home? Or do we condemn violence and conflict, knowing there's a risk of escalation of a military power that appears more than happy to swallow countries whole, stripping away liberties and freedoms that we in Canada take for granted? This was not always a question. Frankly, it's rather new. The Methodist Church, which was around during the First War, they published in 1918, along with Anglican and Mennonite churches, The Church, War, and Patriotism. It's a small report, only 11 pages long, and it is saying that they are going to establish the Army and Navy Board. Before then, yes, you would have military have chaplains in it, and you might have some religious idea about it. God wants you to go to war. God doesn't want this war. But it wasn't really bureaucratized. And so that's what they did. They established a board for their missionary work on and off the battlefield during the times of war. It would commission ordained ministers to be military chaplains. It would establish wartime programs so that us here on the front, on the home front, would know exactly what it is the church wants us to do and how to do so, with maybe programs of preaching topics, prayers, other ways that we can support. It accumulated the first set of military records for Methodist servicemen and servicewomen as the years progressed. It would coordinate with other denominations, a unified front to serve people at home and abroad. This was the very nature of war changing itself. World War I, the Great War, the war to end all wars, was both seen as the final one and also a little bit like the end times for some. You can't look at the pictures and read the accounts of what they've gone through and not have that feeling in your stomach that this is wrong. This is viscerally horrible in a way that we have never seen before. One of the first goals of the Army and Navy Board of the Methodist Church was to squash rumors that the mainline churches were sending anything less than their fair share of soldiers overseas. They wanted to make it clear that we were sending just as many young men over to Vimy Ridge, to every battle that we have encountered, as any other denomination. Christian duty became wrapped up with patriotism. You are called to fight as a good Christian, and if you die, God is with you. You are no longer simply a dead 20-year-old on the battlefield. You are a martyr. Go for your cause. Fast forward to the Second World War. Many of the people that know of the Second War that were in it also were there for the first, or their parents were. This is very new. This is like us talking about 9/11 in terms of time. The scars of the first war were not yet healed, and yet here we are. Patriotic slogans are passed around again with a reminder that Nazis will not be stopped until they are met with force, that no appeasement is going to quell Hitler's hunger to conquer, and that Canadians can be the bravest troops on the front lines. Go and serve. It had become almost cliche at this point that Canadian troops were going to do things that other countries could not and would not do. It was here 14 years after the UCC was inaugurated that we began to see dissent for the first time. These were not naive ministers. These were not hopeless dreamers. These were men who often served themselves. These were men who saw their fathers and brothers and neighbors serve and saw the trauma. In October of 1939, very shortly after the war was declared, 65 UCC ministers formed a witnessed against war group, signing a letter to the National Observer condemning war. It is not what Christ called us to do. Christ called us to be pacifists, not warmongers. They made it clear they were speaking for themselves, not on behalf of the UCC, and that didn't matter. A lot of them were kicked out of their churches, never to be found work again. After all, if I was up at the pulpit saying to everyone here, your children that are in this war are dying pointlessly and we need to stop, it would be very hard for anyone to come up and ask if I could do their wedding or their funeral. I get it. They knew the risk and they said it anyway. The Attorney General wanted to see if the letter published in the National Observer violated the War Measures Act. Speaking of censorship, this was not a majority vote, not by a long shot, but it was one of the first times that a number of people in the UCC openly dissented against a government policy like this. There were strong voices in support of the war, of course. Again, they knew in their heart of hearts that if they did not step in, that no one would step in, and it would only end when all of Europe was controlled by one dictator. No liberties, no freedoms, simply carnage. That war itself is indeed sinful if you are the one going out and starting it. But God says, go finish it. There is a just war theology. There is also an underlying current put out in the letters, Christians save other Christians. It is your Christian duty to go out and defend. It's the sort of the last bit of Western imperialism that says we will go in and save the day. It can be seen a little bit throughout. And of course, many UCC members gave everything they could in droves. They contributed with not just enlisting. I think about 20% of all Canadian service folk were UCC. They didn't keep complete stats, but that's the closest one I could get. There was money put in, labor, materials, and morale. A big one that I think our stewardship committee should have a conversation about, victory war bonds. Many churches bought war bonds during this time, especially if they were in debt from the Depression. They would put this in knowing that the return would help them after the war. And what better way to tell the young men and women overseas that you're supporting them than saying, we are investing from our own church. I don't know how well our stewardship committee would take it if I said to them, we need to invest thousands of dollars into the government war bond. I don't think it would go well. One church, West Oxford United Church, in 1942 put in a $700 war bond. That's $2,600 today. That's not including their own personal time, labor, any money they could, any scraps that could go in. The method was simple. War bonds, it became a way to proclaim your support for the troops. If you could not fight, you sent over what you could. And after the war, those returns on those bonds helped build the churches, especially with the post-war boom. We needed buildings back. This just war mindset, the idea that this was okay because it had to be done, it's one that we kept over the decades through campaigns like Korea and Afghanistan, peacekeeping missions throughout the world. Ultimately, I am not a military person, but I know that sometimes the only way to stop the enemy is by force. So where does that leave the UCC today? We have chaplains. They're over there right now. Many of us do know someone serving in the military. There are many United Church of Canada people serving in the military. But the war battleground has changed. In 2025, our military is science fiction compared to a century ago. And a century ago, it was considered Armageddon. Now we can send drones. We can send missiles across time zones. You do not have to see the enemy's face in order to hurt them. Bombs can be triggered in nations apart from each other, and digital warfare can do an incredible amount of damage. These are tools of the trade, just as important as a gun, as a tank, as a Humvee. Stephen has talked about this in previous sermons, that humans are not natural killers. We do not grow up thinking that it is natural to want to inflict pain upon someone else. The only way to get a soldier to do that is either the quick and dirty way is to make it that self-defense immediately. You have no option. And I think that's one that as a civilian, I can understand more. I don't want to hurt someone, but if someone says that they are going to kill me or my family, I could see myself putting up a fight. The other one is to simply work on dehumanizing the enemy. Make it harder and harder to see them as another person that also grew up and went to school, that wanted to be an architect or a shopkeeper, that loved traveling, that has a comic book collection. It is harder and harder to make them, it's harder and harder to fight the enemy when you know all of this stuff. So you remove as much of it as possible, and soon they become dots on a screen. Much easier. This is an ancient problem. Today, we humanize ourselves, and it's so easy to dehumanize others, whether online or simply with media. It is here, I argue, in the United Church, along with any other church, that we are filled with veterans who served in wars of all kinds. We know what that trauma looks like. Our job is not to be a naysayer because we don't care or because we're not patriots. Our job is to be a conscience, to be one small break on what is, can easily be a runaway train. When governments censor voices of peace, just as they silence storytellers of all kinds and their stories, it is all too easy to insist that there's full-throated support for violence on another community. And it's all too easy to convince us that that community has full-throated support to hurt us. It turns into hatred and bigotry and violence. The runaway train needs brakes. The church, including ours, serves as those brakes, not to stop the train completely, not to say we shall never enter combat, but to remind ourselves as a voice, as a conscience, that we needn't have it be the first and only answer. We are reminded that God's image is in the enemy and not just in us. That the psalm we heard of today was spoken not just by us, but whoever's on the other side. They want to go home safe too. The kingdom of heaven is one of peace, not of war. So pause, really discern, and let war be the absolute last resort, having exhausted every other option, done with the utmost restraint, so that we do not have to deal with decades and decades of trauma that just re-scars everyone all over again. The UCC in its origins would claim to be the church with the soul of a nation, the very heart of Canadiana. It would be the voice of conscience, of reason. It's also the church filled with people who are willing to risk a lot to defend their communities. I argue that the one thing they would not want to risk is their soul, to not risk their conscience, the spirit within each and every one of us that says, I see the image of Christ in you. God is with each and every human who has died on that battlefield, everyone who enlisted, everyone who was drafted, every single one who gave it all in the name of peace. And God asks us to remember the next time that we are asked to go to war, that we are fighting with God's image, just as God's image is within all of us. We need not be bound to war. We could be bound to peace. Let us lift up every prayer and every hope we have, so that one day soon, this is not about current veterans, but about a history we can put behind us with gratitude and with hope. Amen.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Rooster Crows Podcast. We at Lawrence Park Community Church are a progressive church in North Toronto. And if you'd like to learn more about our church and the things that we do, please go to our website at lawrenceparkchurch.ca. And to hear our entire services and sermons in video form, please go to our YouTube channel. As we finish this podcast, we're going to hear our music director, Dr. Daniel Rubinoff, and our guest trumpet player, Robert DeVito, perform Voluntary in F. We hope you enjoy and have a wonderful week.